Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you're frustrated with typical hunting and fishing magazines and tired of reading content meant for guys that are up in the north or up in the Midwest, check out Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't fish or hunt in your home state. You can pick up a Great Days Outdoors Magazine subscription, and it will help you become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors Magazine can be found at your local Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, Bass Pro Shops, or you can save online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are a lot of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails, and recreational sites, 25 state parks, and wildlife management areas too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. I'm your host, Joe Baia, here today with my co-host, Butch Theory. And today, Butch, we're going to be talking about something that I personally think every deer camp needs, and that's a walk-in cooler. I love them, but I kind of have a love-hate relationship with them. Every time I've been able to use a walk-in cooler, super convenient, results in better quality meat, but they break. Every walk-in cooler I've ever been a part of has been kind of like, oh, cooler isn't working yet. We got to get somebody out here to work on it. You know, and it just becomes this big silver box that doesn't do what we wanted to do. And it's just pretty much in the way. And then, you know, it's just, they're just not that practical for most hunters.
Well, they're very permanent too, unless you own your land and you're going to be there for the rest of your life.
Even if you do own your land, do you want to have a walk-in cooler to chill the deer? You know, unless you've got a ton of land, you're killing a ton of deer. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
You don't need all that.
For a small landowner, you know, who's killing a few deer a year. Yeah, and then it's just sitting there the rest of the year. I like them, but it's just hard. The practicality of it is not always there. But, you know, today we're going to be talking about a new option that's out there in a portable deer cooler, really comparing those to your walk-in type that we're familiar with. There's some do-it-yourself options out there. They're all viable. They all have probably a certain market in mind. But the portable deer cooler is something that I wasn't familiar with, and it seems like a really good option to talk about that, and really to also get into why you'd want to hang your deer in the first place. Like it's a meat quality thing, it's a convenience thing. And to do that this week, we're talking with Brad Lockwood of Coola Buck. Brad, welcome to Huntland, man.
Hey, pleasure to be here with you guys. Yeah.
I love that name, by the way. But before we jump into what people need to understand about hanging deer and what they need to think about when it comes to a deer cooler, tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into, you know, working at Coola Buck.
Yeah. Well, my background's actually kind of in the meat industry. I grew up in the meat packing industry from the time I was 15 years old, you know, just kind of started picking up a knife and trimming meat off the bones at a local butcher shop and, you know, kind of worked my way up the ladder. And then when I was 19, I actually owned a place, and that was a federal inspected packing plant. And then later on in life, I bought a federal inspected retail plant, and we were making smoked meats and things like that for about 60 different supermarkets and grocery stores and mom and pop shops and things like that. We had our own private label brand of smoked products and everything. So and at that time too, we processed a lot of deer, you know, as you can imagine. You know, I'm from Pennsylvania. And
oh, y'all like to kill them up in Pennsylvania like we do in Alabama. I know about you Pennsylvania boys.
Yep. I grew up in the brown it's down era. So yeah. You know, before any of the pointless and antler restrictions came in place, you know, I mean, deer were crazy, man. I mean, I would generally, you know, at our packing plants, you know, and it was two plants, you know, we would be cutting anywhere from, you know, 500 to 1,000 deer a year at each plant. So we were mowing them through. We were processing a lot of deer. So when you do that many of them, you develop a pretty good system at getting it done. So,
you know, I pride myself on my deer processing. It's something that I try to be as meticulous as I can be in the environment that I process in. I enjoy doing it myself. I don't take my deer to a processor. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I enjoy it. I take a lot of pride in it.
Sure.
Growing up, I was part of a big deer club that we had a, you know, we had a big camp house, big skin shed, walk-in cooler. And the norm for us then was to skin the deer, let the deer hang and deal with it on another day. You know, maybe we'd let it hang for 24 hours. Maybe we'd let it hang for a week. At the time, I didn't know why we were doing that. I just thought that was the way you did it. And as I've grown up, I've lost access to a deer cooler. You know, now I'm having to do this out on my place. We don't have a cooler. It, you know, we're dealing with all the things that come with doing this out in the wild and messing with ice and coolers and that kind of thing. And, you know, I really think personally, I've noticed the meat quality has suffered by not being able to hang my deer for long periods. And just processing the deer for me is not as enjoyable, you know, when I can't hang that deer. So why is it important to hang a deer after harvesting it? What benefits does it provide just from a meat quality perspective?
Sure. Well, you know, you touched on a couple of different things there that I can expand on. And like you said, I don't mean to say anything bad about processors. I was a processor, you know, myself, but I can just tell you when you're bringing in that many deer into a place, you don't have time to let them hang. You know, I mean, you don't have time to age them properly. You know, you got to get them in and get them out and make room for the next 100 deer to come in, you know, so you're just kind of mowing them through. And kind of the bad thing about it, and I usually do when I speak on podcasts and things or just different places, I usually take a few nasty emails from some guys. You know, I was president of the Pennsylvania Association of Meat Processors, and I was kind of the president over like 260 meat packing companies here in Pennsylvania. And man, you know, we were all in the same boat, you know, just trying to get them done. So you bring out one deer, throw it on the cutting block, you whack that one up, get it off the table in 10 minutes, bring the next one out, whack it up, get it off the table in 10 minutes. After you do 50 deer a night, those tables get pretty nasty, you know, so the meat quality just, it's good, man. I'm just going to tell you, if you're processing your own deer, and maybe you have a processor, maybe whoever's listening might have a processor that only does a few or just a handful of deer, you know, so you're getting a good quality product back. But most of the major packing plants, man, we have to. We're just busting them out, you know, get them in, get them done, get them in, get them done. So, and if you take good quality care of your deer, you make a good shot, you know, you gut it properly, everything like that, you know, you're going to get back some pretty good table fare. But if the next guy doesn't, I mean, his stuff's going right through the same meat grinder as yours. It just really is, you know, I mean, it's so much better to take care of it yourself. But when you're talking about aging, you know, it's like we said, you know, if you're a big processor, big packer, you just don't have time to let them hang and let them age. You got to get them in, get them out. But there's two things that are really happening when you're hanging and aging a deer. Number one, the evaporation coil in that cooling system is actually drawing that body moisture out. It's kind of pulling it out of the inside of the carcass. So you're getting that kind of that gamey flavor is getting pulled out. And then as that animal ages, you know, the enzymes, the muscle tissue starts to break down and become, you know, you just get a little more tender of a product. Mm-hmm. So there's two things happening. One, you're getting that body moisture out of there. I mean, we've all field dressed a deer on a cool morning and, you know, that smell comes up out of there, that body heat. So you want to get that body heat out of the carcass, let that evaporator out. And then you also want to let that muscle tissue break down so that you get a good tender product, you know, good tender eating product. So, you know, we always followed a rule of thumb, and everybody always asked me this question, but USDA had always said that it was 3 days for every 100 pounds of carcass weight was like proper drying time. So that's why when you go into a, you know, an upper grade steakhouse, you might see something on the menu that says, you know, our steaks are dry aged a full 28 days to ensure tenderness. So what they're meaning there is like, you know, so if that beef dress 700 pounds, you know, 3 days for every 100 pounds is 21 days, you know, if it's a heavier. So that's what they're saying, you know, like they're following that aging scale of
right.
3 days for every 100 pounds. So if you shoot a deer, you know, you're talking 3 to 5 days to let that body moisture come out of the carcass, let that muscle tissue break down. So, yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. I think maybe some of your Pennsylvania deer, you might be like 5-6 days. I think on some of our Alabama deer, you might be like 2 days. But I mean, ultimately, you know, being able to hang them from a processing perspective, cutting up a dry, cold deer,
Oh my, yeah.
Is so much more enjoyable than cutting up, you know, a warm, wet deer. And it's so much easier. For me, it's safer. I make fewer mistakes and slips when I'm, you know, dealing with a carcass that's been hung.
Yeah.
I just enjoy that process so much more. But also, you know, it's more convenient. You know, when I think about, like, a lot of times we shoot a lot of deer in the afternoons, you know, and if you shoot that deer in the afternoon, you're tracking it after dark, you come back to camp, you get the deer, you load the deer up, you get back to the skinning shed, and by the time you get even just get the guts out of the deer, it's 8 o'clock at night, you know, in a lot of cases. And I've got two little kids, everybody needs dinner, you know, it's a lot to try to have to deal with that thing that night.
Yeah.
Well, not to mention if you kill, you know, if you're doing doe harvesting, herd management and things like that, and you have a couple guys up there and you kill four or five. I mean, it's a lot to do in one sitting.
It is. And yeah, so then you start rushing. You don't have the time to, like you said, your processor, he's got to get them in, get them out, because guess what? Next weekend, 100 more are coming. Well, you know, it's kind of the same thing for you. You're trying to get this thing done, get it in the cooler, get it cold, so that you can go get dinner done and get back. It's so nice when you kill one, you know, in the afternoon, and it's going to be a nice cold night, and you can just let that deer hang, and then tomorrow morning you can deal with it. And a cooler, of course, allows you to deal with it 2 days from now, 3 days from now, next weekend.
Yeah, and we deal with these questions every day, you know, when people are calling on the phone, these exact same things. You know, I'm tired of trying to find a processor that's open at 8 o'clock at night. You know, I shoot a deer, it's still 70 degrees outside, elk, whatever it is, you know, whatever, wherever you're at, antelope, whatever species you're hunting, you know, we're talking Pennsylvania and Alabama here, so we're mainly talking whitetails. But I mean, it's just, and the peace of mind too. The peace of mind to know that when you harvest that animal and you start heading back home, you got in a pickup truck or in your four-wheeler or your ATV or whatever, knowing you're taking it home to a cooler. And your mind, you know, you just harvested an animal, and you're, you know, the last thing you want to do is be sitting there, you know, ruining your evening of enjoyment, turning it into pain and agony, trying to find a processor, calling, hey, are you open? Hey, are you open? Can I bring my deer? You know,
we don't have enough ice. We got to run into town and get some more ice.
Yeah. It just turns something that's supposed to, be a really enjoyable experience into sometimes a nightmare, you know, because you can't get that animal cooled down. Yeah. And two, you know, you were touching about, like, you know, getting able to process that animal later. You know, I talk to guys all the time that are like, hey, I'm just not as quick with a knife as you are. It takes me a day to cut up a deer, 2 days. It's like, it's great. You can walk out to the cooler, take off a hind quarter, bring it into the kitchen table or your little processing area or whatever, cut up that hind quarter, get it all packed and put in a freezer, you know, and don't worry about it. You know, right. Take care of whatever, take the kids to the soccer game, do whatever you want to do. Next evening, come home, cut off two front shoulders, you know, cut up those two front shoulders, get them all packed, do whatever you're going to do with them, get them in the freezer. You know, you have a lot more leniency when you have that cooler right there at your beck and call. You can't beat it.
Absolutely. I've done a little bit of hunting here and there in Illinois, a little bit colder states than we have down here in Alabama in the Southeast.
Yeah.
And I've seen them. We used to let deer hang, you know, we get down in the 30s, teens at night, no problem. And they would let them hang for a really, really, really long time.
Sure.
But they also didn't want them to hang if it was too cool. And obviously, if it was too hot, they didn't want to let them hang too long. And here in Alabama, we deal with that, like we were just talking about, you know, it's going to be
too hot.
40. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be 40 at night, maybe, if you can let him hang at night. But then the next day at 8 o'clock, it's going to be 75 again. Mm-hmm. So kind of what's your optimal temperature range to hang deer for, you know, as long as the rules of thumb allow?
Yeah, you know, I always kind of follow by the USDA rules when I talk about it, you know, because as a manufacturer, I've got liability issues, so I gotta watch what I say. But you know, 41 degrees and below is the optimum temperature that the USDA has said. That's where microorganisms begin to grow very rapidly. Anything over 41 degrees. Now, I will say that there's some other companies that have done a lot of scientific documentation, and they say that number might be a little closer to 42 or 43 that you can get away with it. And the reason they like that higher temperature is because the lower the temperature goes to 32, which is freezing, the slower that body moisture that we talked about is going to get out of that carcass, because you're kind of freezing it in the carcass. Does that make sense?
Totally.
So the lower that temperature gets, and then also too, we were talking about enzymes in there that break down the muscle proteins and make it more tender. The closer you get to that 32, 33 degree temperature, the slower those enzymes are going to work. So a lot, you know, there is an optimal temperature. You know, I really, myself personally, I like that 38 to 41 degree temperature. That's kind of where I like to be. I don't like to be much above 41, and I don't like to be much below 38. When you start getting below 38, then, like I said, I just don't see the aging working quite as well. So,
you know, you mentioned that correct me if I'm wrong, but you think you said 2 days per 100 pounds addressed weight.
Three days per 100
pounds. Okay, so 3 days per 100 pounds addressed weight.
Yep.
And you hear people talking about dry aging beef, you know, and they're like, oh, it's a 45-day or 60-day or 90-day dry age and that kind of thing. When it comes to venison wild game, how long can you hang your deer? So, like, I can see that, like, there's certainly an advantage to being able to let it hang for 2 to 3 days, right, and deal with it at another time. But there's also an advantage to being able to let it hang, like, from this weekend next weekend,
right?
You know, and I guess the question really is how long can you do it? And is there any advantage to going longer? Like, would you want to stretch it out for a better or different type of product? And, you know, maybe, I don't know. I've heard people say, if you're going to age a whitetail, you really need to leave the hide on. I've heard lots of different stuff out there. So how long can you do it?
Yeah, you know, I know guys, and I have, you know, I've aged out closer to that 2 week mark. I've gone that far. I've talked to other guys that have gone further, but what happens is the aging, the benefit doesn't outweigh the cost. So the longer you let that animal hang and age, the more dark material that's going to materialize on the outside, the more dried out meat you're going to have, the more trimming you're going to do. You're going to have to trim that off and throw it away because it's kind of getting dark and you can't really mix it into your hamburger, can't really do anything with it. So the waste doesn't outweigh the cost benefit, you know, the benefit that you're getting from it. So, you know, that 5 to 7 day period on a whitetail deer is good. Now, if you have an old doe, you know, you have a doe or a buck that's shot kind of early in the year and he's got a lot of fat on the outside of him, you might be able to go a little bit longer because that fat's going to protect the meat a little bit. You know, if you're going to use a game bag, you know, game bags have gotten really popular now for guys that are aging meat. You know, you can put it in a game bag and that game bag will help keep the surface from drying out so much. So there's some things you can do, but really it's something that you've got to kind of look at yourself and say, man, this thing's getting really dark on the outside. I'm going to be trimming off a lot of stuff, wasting a lot of meat, and I'm not really getting any better flavor from my animal. I'm not really getting any more moisture that's evaporating out of the carcass. That's why they kind of set that time frame at, you know, 3 days for every 100 pounds, 3 to 4 days for every 100 pounds. You know, you can be a little flexible in there, but there does come a point where, you know, the cost doesn't outweigh the benefit. So
I know there's no doubt in my mind that there's tons of benefits to being able to have a deer cooler, not only just for the convenience of processing on your schedule, but also the benefits and the meat quality and that kind of thing. The issue comes up where, you know, growing up, maybe you've been a part of a place that had a nice big walk-in cooler. You know, you got a spot there where you can put 6, 7, 8, 10 deer, you know, and let them hang and do like we're talking about. And, you know, I got to experience that. I know what that's like, but as I've gotten to be an adult, I've started hunting a lot of smaller leases where it's just me and a couple of guys leasing a couple hundred acres, and there's no power, there's no permanent camp or anything like that. There's just no facility to house a deer cooler. And then, of course, you know, Butch and I both have our own little piece of land, you know, that we hunt on. And the issue becomes then it's like, well, man, number one, money, but also it's just, I don't need a big giant deer cooler, you know, like, I don't need a huge walk-in cooler.
10 or 15 deer.
We might shoot 2 or 3, you know, on a good weekend, you know, and that's kind of more common. So when you start to think about getting your own deer cooler, there are those hurdles you have to jump through. And we can talk a little bit about
different
types of deer coolers that are out there. But before we jump into that, how big of a cooler do you really need? Like from a volume perspective, if somebody's trying to think about this and they're going, we might want to hang two deer, or we might want to hang five deer. Is there a rule of thumb on like measurements on how many, deer a certain size cooler will hold?
Well, they're really, as far as like a capacity, a square footage, I really don't have, a lot of data on that. I'm going to be honest with you. I know like our smaller unit, it'll hold two to three deer. Our bigger unit will hold four to six, just depending on, how big your deer is. Are we talking big Kansas bucks, or are we talking, Alabama deer, or are we talking Pennsylvania deer? But one thing that you want to do is have enough space in between them that they're not touching.
Okay.
Because when you pack them together and you're packing that hot meat together, there's no way for that airflow to get in between that carcass, and you can get a lot of spoilage that'll occur there very quickly. So you definitely want to make sure that you have enough space in your cooler that you're not packing them together and have that meat touching in any way, shape, or form.
So it's not a scenario where, like, I guess, is that the magic to being able to actually hang the deer, is that you're allowing that cool air to completely circulate around? Because, I've often thought about why don't we just take a refrigerator and just shove all that deer in there inside the refrigerator? You could cut it up into primals and quarters and everything, but when you do that, you've got it stacked on top of each other and it's all touching. So I guess that's the rub.
That's what happens. Like, I actually had a phone call from some guys. It's amazing some of the calls that I get from some guys that were elk hunting in Colorado, and they shot two bulls, and they went down to a Lowe's or Home Depot, and they bought a freezer, and they quartered them all up, and they threw them in there, and they thought they were going to doing a good thing, and they froze that meat. Well, it froze on the outside, but the center never froze.
Oh, wow.
And all that meat was just spoiled in the inside of it. When they started thawing it out, they couldn't believe the smell that was coming out of it. And it's just because, there was no air circulation in the
Interesting.
center of that. I was like, man, if you would have put racks down and like racked it, and then put like some 2x4s and put some space and laid another rack and racked it so that the air can flow and move through there, you'd be all right. But you definitely, airflow around the carcass is an absolute must. Absolute must, no matter how you're going to do it.
Yeah, so that makes you really realize that it's not as simple as just finding an old refrigerator,
Right.
or doing something like that. You got to figure out a way. So when you're thinking about a deer cooler, what's out there? What's on the market? Of course, you guys produce one style. Yours is a portable
Right.
deer cooler. I mean, you've got the everybody I think probably everybody's familiar with the walk-in. I would call that a semi-permanent or even a permanent.
Pretty darn permanent, I would think.
What's out there at people's disposal to consider in the world of deer coolers?
Well, you've really got about three options. You have our option, which is the portable cooler. One thing that is really unique about ours and is that we're able to cool a lot of meat in a very small area because of our patented airflow system. So the way our cooler works is it actually pulls the air in at floor level, clean down at the floor. So as we know, hot air rises, cold air falls. Okay, so hot air rises, cold air falls. So when you hang that warm deer in there, all that warm air is going to go to the top, okay, and it rises to the top. Well, our cooler sucks that air down, pulls it all the way into the bottom. So the cooling coil is all the way in the bottom, not up in the top, like in the roof, like you see a normal walk-in cooler. So it pulls it down, it cools the air, and then it blows it up an air baffle that's kind of sewn into the back of the bag, the insulated bag, and it blows it up across the ceiling, which then once again pushes that warm air down. So it's basically like a cold air cooling curtain. It's just continually flowing that cold air over top of your carcass. So we're able to cool an animal in a very small area very quickly. So when you're working with a big walking cooler, what we traditionally think about, they basically cool an animal based on cubic feet of cold area. Meaning, like if you take a warm deer and you stick it in in an area that's say 8 foot by 10 foot, and it's already 30 degrees in there, it's not going to change the ambient temperature in there at all. You're going to, because there's already so much cold air in there. But if you take a deer and you stick it in a small area, say 3 foot by 3 foot, it's going to change that temperature quickly because you stuck all that hot meat in there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
It's like sticking, same thing. So it's like putting warm meat in your Yeti cooler. The temperature is going to raise really quickly because you stuck it in a very small area. So you're going to need a lot of ice in there to balance that. But anyway, so that's kind of the thought process of it. You know, our cooler takes up very little space. We're able to cool down a lot of meat in a very small area because of the patented airflow system. So that's what makes ours really different. Now, the big walk-ins, like you said, you know, they take up a lot of space. They're kind of a permanent fixture, and they rely on how many square cubic feet of cold air is in that room. So when you put it in there, you know, it doesn't raise the temperature in the room very much because it's such a big room. So that's a couple of the different options that are out there. Another one too is to build your own. You know, we deal with that all the time. And, you know, I mean, guys do it. You know, they'll go out and they'll stud in walls. You know, they'll put in foam insulation or they'll use spray foam insulation. They'll use plywood on the walls, some sort of a cleanable surface that they may go down to Lowe's or Home Depot and buy some sort of a washboard that you'd line the inside of a shower with. So they make it cleanable and they put all that in there and then they'll go out and buy just a giant AC unit. And they'll cut a wall hole in the wall and they put this AC unit in and they buy one of those override systems. There's a couple different ones on the market now, and it'll override the sensors in the air conditioner and make the air conditioner just run and run and run and run and run to bring that temperature down. You know, the issue with those units is when you put a lot of meat in there, you put introduce a lot of hot, moistured meat in there, those units just aren't made to do that. So a lot of times they'll freeze up, they'll ice up, and now you got a real problem on your hands because you got to unplug it, let the unit ice off, plug it back in again, you know, things like that. So there's several different options out there that are available. You know, what we really love about ours is also, too, is resale value. You know, you have something that's portable. If you ever decide you're going to sell it, you can just call your buddy up and say, hey, it's right here. Collapse it down, load it in the bed of his truck, and away it goes. You know, like you'd mentioned before, you can move it from farm to farm. If you and your friends do decide you're going to go out west on an elk hunting trip, hey, no problem. We got our own cooler. You can load it in the bed of the pickup truck, take it out and run it off of a generator. So you have so many different options that are available there with the unit, but.
That's like one of those things. You travel out west and you got your cooler with you. Like, you guaranteed you're not going to kill anything if you do that. That's, you know?
Right. Way too prepared.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. You're too prepared.
Well, the thing I see too with the nice part about the portability is, you know, like I mentioned, there's so many scenarios where it pays off to be able to hang that deer. I'm not even talking meat quality. I'm just talking about convenience. Like, a lot of guys hunt, you know, they've got their deer lease that they have is just theirs, or maybe they've got two buddies that they hunt and it's just 30 minutes away from their house. It's convenient for them. They can get an after work hunt in, they can get a before work hunt in, they can get a hunt in right before the baseball game, you know, on the weekend. And it's so nice to be convenient, but because it's so close to the house, they don't have a camp. There is no facility. They just transit back and forth, all their hunting gear's in their truck, and they live out of their garage during hunting season. And, you know, being able to have something that you could put up during hunting season and run at your house, in your garage, when you kill a deer and then put it away when you don't have one hanging or when it's just not deer season, man, that's a big nod towards portability for a lot of people, I would think.
Well, yeah, that brings up my next question. Like, how portable is this thing? Is this something that, like we're talking about, you know, you kill a deer on Saturday afternoon, you got to get up early, go home Sunday. Can I hang that thing up Saturday night, break it down, bring it home with me, and then pick it back up and then deal with it later at home? How portable is this? Is it easy to break down, transport, and then pop back up?
Yeah, you're talking, you know, maximum one guy, 10 minutes to put it together.
Wow.
You know, I mean, you know, maximum one guy, 10 minutes. If you got two guys, you can put it together in under 5 minutes. So it sets up really quick.
It takes me longer to deal with keeping a cooler iced and keeping water off the meat. I mean, that's other thing too. You know, we didn't really get into that a lot of times, but I know when I shoot a deer on a weekend, I like to let it age a little bit. And so, yeah, you know, I've kind of rigged up different ways to keep a deer in an ice, you know, a cooler full of ice, but you got to kind of keep the ice off the meat. So keep the water draining, but you're trying to keep it all cold. And I'm always nervous, you know, cause I'm like, man, I need to go out there and look at that cooler, make sure I got enough ice and it's really hot.
Make sure
today.
It's draining properly.
And then it is draining. So you've got bloody, the water and the blood and everything's draining off the meat. It's draining somewhere around your house. And it's just a chore and it can be a lot of work to end up producing something that is quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I know it always gets to be a dollar factor too. Sometimes, you know, I'll talk to guys on the phone and they're like, man, you know, I just look at the money that it costs to buy one. And I'm like, let me ask you a question. How much is your bow? Guys are like, oh, well, man, I got this. I'm like, you know, you probably got close to $2,000 in your bow when you go walking out there. You know, you look at the bow, the broadheads, the arrows, the release, look at the clothes on your back. You probably already have 3/4 of the cost. And what do you get for that bow? You know, it's worth 50 cents in, you know, in a couple of years. You know, this cooler, you know, it's something that you're going to have for the rest of your life. You know, it's a commercial refrigeration unit. It's made to last a lifetime. I mean, you can run it, you know, 24 hours a day, 365. I mean, I know we have outfitters. We've got outfitters in New Mexico, outfitters in Montana, Colorado, places that plug these things in the 1st of August, and they never shut them off till December. Okay. You know, they're full of meat the whole time. You know, just, you know, somebody's always got something in there, whether it's a cape or whether it's 2 hindquarters hanging. Maybe it's even some camp meat. One of the guides shot something and they got it hanging in there. It might not even be client meat, you know, but they're just always busy with it. So it's very nice.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. This week's show is brought to you by First South Farm Credit. What does a farm mean to you? Maybe it's just a piece of land where you can go relax or enjoy the outdoors. Whatever the farm means to you, First South Farm Credit can help you finance or refinance that perfect piece of land. As a successful financial cooperative, First South shares its profits with its borrowers in the form of a patronage refund, which lowers your cost of borrowing. To find out how First South can help you, visit their website at firstsouthland.com or call them at 800-955-1722. They are an equal housing lender. And also brought to you by Texas Hunter. Since 1954, Texas Hunter Products has produced the best engineered and finest quality feeders and hunting blinds in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality and durability. By sticking to premium standards, the company delivers tough, long-lasting products that meet the real-life needs of anglers and hunters across America. Their fish feeders, deer feeders, hunting blinds, and outdoor accessories are among the highest rated in the industry. You can trust that your purchase from Texas Hunter Products will meet your needs for generations to come. To learn more, visit TexasHunter.com.
Let's talk about the cooler buck a little more in depth.
Sure.
How long can the cooler maintain that optimal temperature? And you mentioned running it off a generator. Is this going to be something we have to have a special plug or a special cord for? Or how does it power?
No, they just run off of a standard 115 plug, you know, just like the standard plug in your house, you know, 15 amp breaker. So you can run it off of any generator. Generally, you know, now we have had guys that tried to run off those little Honda 2000s. So we recommend like 3000 to 3500 watt or better. A lot of our elk outfitters, like I was mentioning earlier, they'll run the generator during the day, but at night the temperature will get down. And you had mentioned that earlier, you know, that even in Alabama, some nights you might have temperatures that are down into the 40s and
sure.
whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
So you have that option that you could, if you were running off a generator, that you could unplug it, you know. And the other thing too, is if it's down to 40 degrees at night, your cooler's not even going to run anyway. You can have it plugged in out there and the cooler's just going to flow the air just to kind of maintain the temperature. The compressor might kick on and off once in a while, but the cooler runs just like your refrigerator. You know, whenever it senses the need for cold, the compressor kicks on, flows the cold air. As soon as it comes down to temperature, the compressor kicks off. And, you know, basically the way we set it at like a 36 degree is the low and 41, 42 is the high. So basically the cooler will kick on. It'll pull the temperature down to 36. As soon as it hits 36, you'll hear the compressor kick off. The fans will continue to blow, you know, flowing the air through the cooler. Then once it rises up to about 42, 43, boom, it kicks back on again, pulls the temperature back down. So it's just continually kind of holding that temperature between 36 and 41 or 42, whatever you have it set at.
Thing I kind of like about that too is, you know, you were talking about your outfitters kind of using it to maybe store cape or
yeah.
You mentioned, you know, having some camp meat there. Maybe they're going in and they're cutting off a backstrap or cutting up a high
yeah.
quarter for camp meat. But I mean, every time I'm at a hunting camp, most of the time it's not a permanent living residence. A lot of campers, There's a lot of just kind of makeshift weekend type shelters. And you got, if there's a refrigerator there, it's usually a small camper type refrigerator. And a lot of times the weekend's food and drink is in coolers. It's, you know, you got to do all that too. Can you use this, you know, deer cooler to just, hey, I'm throw some groceries in there for the weekend and kind of keep other stuff cool? Because I mean, it's a big cooled space. It should work pretty much just like a fridge, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I just actually came home on Saturday. Some friends of mine, local friends, of course, we've sold a lot of units here in the local area. And, you know, guys use them for graduation parties, you name it, wedding receptions, things like that. I always tell people, you'd be surprised how much you need a walk-in cooler when you don't have one. You know, you're trying to store, even if, you know, whatever it is, whether it's Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, whatever the event is, and you don't have enough room in your standard household refrigerator to store everything. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I got a cooler out in the garage.
Yeah.
Just run out 5 minutes, pop it up, set it up. You can put one of those, you know, just one of them wire racks. You can get them anywhere, you know, Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depot, whatever. Just get one of those wire racks and set in there and just stack all your stuff right in there. You know, you can store so much stuff, you know, 20, 30 cases of water, your favorite beverage, whatever you want. So,
yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I can't tell you how many of my friends have the beer cooler in the garage, you know, that
for sure.
Function at every Thanksgiving, that's where all the leftovers go, or that's where the turkey's sitting, you know, waiting on Thanksgiving Day. I mean, you off quite often need that extra fridge, and most people have them. This could kind of take the place of that in a lot of garages,
or just
be a supplement to that. And being able to put it away when you don't need it is big. Who's it not right? Who's the portable not right for? Is there anybody that's, you know, going to be dissatisfied with the portable deer cooler?
You know, we haven't really met anybody yet that hasn't been happy with it. And I tell people that, like, if you want to know, just try to find one on the used market. There's none out there. You know, you can look Craigslist, eBay, wherever. And I do, you know, I get on there and search once in a while, and there's none out there for sale. Guys buy them. They love them. They keep them. You know, they give them to their sons or their kids or whatever when they're done with them, you know, whatever the situation is. And, but, you know, sometimes, you know, because of the insulated bag that's on the outside. Now, we have a thermal insulated bag that's on the outside, kind of like a soft side cooler, basically. So when you get into those crazy temperatures, like those Texas weather where it's 100, 105, I mean, you've got high humidity, San Antonio, stuff like that, you know, some areas of Georgia, maybe even some spots of Alabama.
It's hot here.
When you start, yeah, you know, we got some guys that do pig hunts and stuff, and they're hunting pigs kind of all year round. You know, when they start tacking them high temperatures, generally we've had guys get kind of innovative and they'll go and maybe get that 2-inch blue foam. It's just like a blue foam insulation just to kind of beef that bag up a little bit. And they'll put some of that and like line the inside of the cooler inside of that bag with that to kind of help them a little bit on those 100-degree days. Because, you know, I don't care who you are. When you start pushing, you know, 100, 105 degrees and you're sticking hot meat in there, it's going to work any cooler, you know, to get that temperature down where you want it to be. So that's really kind of the only thing that we've ever struggled with a little bit was people call and say, man, I'm just not getting it down to the temperature I want it to be. I can't get it below 45. And I'm like, well, what's the outside temperature? And they're like, it's about 102 today.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you know, that's hot, you know, so we're going to have to do a few things here to kind of help you out a little bit, you know, to get a little more airflow moving there. And you know, and insulate the bag a little bit better. And when they do that, then they see that temperature drop down to where they need it to be. So
does your cooler work well in a, I won't call it an outdoor environment because I wouldn't ever, you know, intend to keep it there. But like if somebody wanted to keep this in a pole barn or a skin and shed where it's still exposed to those outdoor temperatures, but it's out of the sun, maybe out of the, you know, out of the rain, out of the sun. You have any issues with that? Because most of the walk-in coolers I've been around are you know, they're kind of stuck out in the open to some extent. You know, they're maybe not in the rain and in the sun, but they're still kind of outside.
Yeah, no. Our unit's been, tested. We sent it went away to a laboratory and they did like a weather testing on it where they put in a cabinet and they rain on it. And we did all that for like UL testings and things like that to make sure that rain wasn't going to short out the compressor. And we were actually on a moose hunt up in Newfoundland. And we shot a moose up there. Well, shot a couple moose actually, but we took the cooler up and we set it out there. And I mean to tell you, I think it rained every day, monsooned, and it was just sitting right out in the weather and didn't bother it a bit.
Wow, that's cool.
Didn't bother it a bit. Now, that's not something I would recommend you do, 24 hours a day, 365, but if you needed to leave it out, it's not going to hurt
Well,
it
if
a
you're on
bit.
your backcountry elk hunt, and you've got your base camp set up and you have one there, you're going to be exposed to the elements in that kind of a scenario. So as long as they can handle it for those short run periods, that's awesome.
Yep, not an issue at all. We have a lot of guys that set them up under, like you said, pole buildings, all that stuff. I've seen everything you can imagine. People put them in even those storage sheds, those sheds that people buy to put in the backyard and then they put their lawnmower and stuff like that in there. I've seen a lot of guys that put them inside there. They just set them up, pop them up right inside that little lawnmower shed and open up the doors to let, so that the compressor can breathe and get air flowing, open up the doors and set it up right in there. No problem. So yeah, a lot of different options.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of those options, kind of what do people need to look for whenever they're in the market for a cooler? We're talking about, yours in particular. I feel like we're kind of on the portable talk now. Like, what fails on these? What do we need to pay, strict attention to? What's going to be the first thing to fail?
Yeah, well, we you talked a little bit earlier about some of the issues with the bigger walk-ins. One thing is making sure that you get a self-contained unit, because as hunters, we're not running this thing all the time and all the time and all the time. So our compressor has what's called like a pump down feature. So when you go to shut the unit off, it doesn't just automatically shut off. Even though you push the power button, you're like waiting a few seconds, and that fools guys. So we put it right in the owner's manual that when you go to power it up, just wait a minute. It's not going to kick on instantly, because what it does is it releases the gas and it starts to let the gas flow through the lines. Okay. So, and I'll get to a point here in a moment, but then when you power it off, it takes a moment for it to shut off because it pulls all that gas out of the lines and into a storage tank. Okay. So, what happens is when that gas just lays in those lines, and just lays in those lines. So, like if your compressor, like in a lot of walk-in coolers, your compressor might be outside. And then the unit's actually inside. You know what I mean? So you got all these tubes of line that's running back and forth, these copper tubes. Well, as that gas lays in those lines, that refrigerant lays in those lines, it causes a lot of issues. So it can turn back into a liquid form. And then when guys kick it on, it's trying to pump and move liquid. It can, burn up various components, can even burn up the compressor. So with those coolers, those big walk-in coolers that you see at grocery stores, convenience stores, supermarkets, those are not made. There's specific ways that they have to be shut down and powered down. So when they're going to power one down, the HVAC technician, he'll come in and he'll pump the unit down. He'll return all the gas back into the closing cylinder, and then he'll shut the unit off in order to work on it. So those are just some things that you want to be careful with. And we get guys that go and they'll maybe get one given to them and they'll cut the lines and they let all the refrigerant go. And then they open up the lines and then that lets moisture get into the lines, which causes issues in the compressor. So, but with our unit, it's a self-contained sealed unit. So when you power it up, it's going to take a few seconds to let the gas start moving through the lines, and then you'll hear the compressor kick on and it'll start flowing the gas. And then when you power it down, you push the power button, it'll be a few seconds until that compressor returns all the gas back into the storage unit, and then the unit will shut down. So those are some very important things to think about, as far as maintenance. But I tell everybody, when you get your cooler from us, if you plug it in the very first day you get it, we tell you that right in the owner's manual, or if you talk to me or one of the salespeople in here, they'll tell you the day you get it, unpack it, within a whatever, plug it in. Check it out. Make sure it cools down to temperature. If everything runs right, we'll never hear from you again. You know, the only time that we really ever have any issues is if some fork truck driver, you know, drops it, pushes it off the edge of the dock, you know, does whatever, you know, and generally there's damage that we can see on the outside of the crate. But usually if it arrives to you, you don't have any issues with it because we test the units here at our factory for 2 full days before they ever leave. So, yeah, we've done a lot of testing on them. So as long as it doesn't get broken in shipping, you're fine.
Brad, Butch and I both have these, I would call them cheap little ice makers at our house that they make, they kind of make, I don't know, Butch, what do they make? An extra 40 pounds of ice, something like that.
Yeah, mine's something like that, 40,
you know,
50.
We use them to supplement our hunting trips and our fish trips and maybe store some bags of ice in the freezer. And we don't really expect a whole lot out of them because they're pretty cheap. But they've been running, Butch has had one running for what, 5 years now, I guess?
Yeah, 4 or 5 for sure.
And I got mine much later after that. And one of the first things I asked him was like, do you turn the thing off? Because I'm not using the ice, you know, all day, every day. And I'm thinking like, do I need to just keep this thing running or turn? He's like, I've never turned mine off.
Mm.
And I don't know the right, you know, when it comes to, you know, your cooler, like, is it best to just leave it running? Or is it okay to be turning it on, turning it off, you know, only having it on when you're using it? And then letting it store powered off and store it powered off.
Yeah. You know, and I'll kind of explain you the difference here with your ice maker. So with the ice maker, when it hits a certain level of ice, you know, it doesn't continue to make more ice, you know, so, you know, they have a switch in there that just kind of shuts it off. And now all it's doing is just kind of keeping the existing ice that's in there cold, mm-hmm. you know, and then if some of it does melt off a little bit, it'll sense it and it'll kick on and make a little bit more ice. So, but with our system, you know, you can shut it off, turn it on. As I was explaining earlier, it has a pump down feature where it actually returns all the gas back into a storage cylinder. So you can pump it down. You can turn it on, turn it off as often as you want. Doesn't hurt anything.
Off season, you can just pack this thing up, put it out of the way if you want it out of the way. You really only got to get it out when you need it.
Yep. Completely self-contained system.
Yeah, it's a big deal because I would think, you know, you put it down, you have to crank it up every 2 or 3 months just to kind of work the kinks out to keep it going.
No.
Seems like everything mechanical is the kiss of death whenever you just let it sit up.
Yeah. And I mean, but being able to be portable and like, you know, like I was saying, I think what keeps people out of a deer cooler, out of having a deer cooler, like you said, maybe it's the cost, you know, maybe they haven't wrapped their mind around that. But I think more than that, it's like, well, I got this deer lease. I don't know if I'm going to have it next year. You know, I don't want to put a permanent deer cooler out there and then I may lose the lease. And then I got to deal with whatever that means. And then if they've got their private hunting land or something like that, then it's, well, I'm not going to use it that much. And now it's just going to sit there, take up space. And, you know, maybe I kill 2, 3, 5, 10 deer a year, even if you're shooting that many, like most of the time it's sitting there not being used. It seems like a really good option for folks to have the portability and being able to store that unit when they're not using it or just get it out when and as needed.
Yeah.
Well, man, that's, I really like that you understand the importance of being able to hang deer. And we're able to explain that to us that it really is going to make a big difference in the quality of your meat. I think of it more about the convenience, being able to process when I want to, when it's best for me. If folks want to get in touch with you guys, you mentioned they can call up and talk to you guys that maybe they got some specific questions about sizing. Maybe they need one for 2 deer, or maybe they need one for 10 deer. What they need to do. How can they get in touch with you guys at Coolabuck?
Yeah, they can go to our website, you know, at www.coolabuck.com, or they can give us a call on the phone. All the stuff's there on the website. I'd recommend, you know, go to YouTube. You know, there's been a lot of people that have posted videos about their cooler and how it runs. And some of the videos aren't the greatest. I mean, they're kind of homemade videos that guys make in their own garage talking about their coolers and stuff, but some really good videos out there and some real good endorsements from some of these guys that are just real life hunters like me and you that are using this cooler and really enjoying it. So, but yeah, go to our website and check out all the videos on YouTube, do your research, and give us a call. We're always happy to jump on the phone and talk to a fellow meathead. You know, as you can tell, I'm very passionate about it. I love it. And I did, I was doing a lot of seminars for different people for the National Rifle Association National Convention. They brought me in for several years to speak to people about processing their game, everything from sausage making to, care in the field to aging, and over and over and over again, it was the same thing. Brad, I'd love to do it. I just don't have a place to cool my deer. So that's where Cool a Buck came from.
Very cool story.
Hunters needing to solve a problem.
Well, very cool story. And thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. Thanks for having me, guys. I'll talk to you anytime.
Enjoyed it, Brad. Good information.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. This week's show is brought to you by Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. And also brought to you by Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. Butch, I've always missed having a deer cooler, man. It was so nice to be able to just shoot a deer and get it in the cooler and deal with it tomorrow or next weekend.
I would not know. I've never hunted anywhere that had one.
Really?
Yeah, never. Like I said, whenever we used to hunt in Illinois, it was just so dang cold up there. They just let them hang for many reasons.
It kind of sounds like, from talking to Brad, like that's not really ideal either, though, because I didn't realize that window of temperature was so narrow.
38 to 41 is pretty specific.
I know. I mean, just listening to him say that kind of calls into question what I've been doing, because I kind of was using like 45. I was like, all right, if it's going to be below 45 tonight, I'll probably let this deer hang till the morning and then I'll deal with it tomorrow. And I'm not going to be doing that this year. I guess I'm only going to be letting them hang if it's 38 to 41 tonight. And then, like in my scenario, I live in Panhandle, Florida, but I hunt in Alabama. And of course, because of CWD, everything, if I bring meat, back across the state line, everything has to be deboned. And so like, man, you talk about, if I shoot a deer on a Sunday morning or a Saturday evening, if I shoot a deer period, just about, it can eat up a whole weekend of hunting, because I've got to skin it, quarter it, debone it, and get it iced down in a way that it's going to be able to stay cold and dry for a few days while I let it age. And it's become a real chore. It would be so nice to be able to shoot a deer on a Saturday or a Sunday, put it in the cooler and let it sit till next weekend, when I'm back up there and then deal with it then. Space the processing of it. I enjoy processing, but when you have to do it all right now is when it gets to be kind of a chore.
Agreed. Especially multiple deer.
Yeah. And when you can do it over time, that's the real benefit I see of the deer cooler, except you just can't, for most people, it's not feasible to go buy a big giant walk-in cooler, hard-sided. You got to figure out where you're going to put it, and you better like where you put it because it's staying there.
And like I said, I don't have a ton of experience with it, but I do with ice makers and freezers and things like that. And it seems like they're always busting. It's always something wrong with those compressors. It's always something wrong with those machines. Sounds like he really put a lot of thought into the compressor and
being able to shut it off and, on, off, store it.
That's a big deal.
You do have a lot of experience with just having to keep ice on meat. And that's always
for sure.
How much do you spend when you shoot a deer, unless you go drop it off at a processor? How much do you spend just keeping it on every single deer, keeping it iced, watching it, making sure that it's not going, making sure it's going to be just right. And then you go to the processor. How much are you spending on the processor? How much are you spending just to get them to do something that you could do it yourself and you could enjoy doing it yourself, and you're having to take it somewhere, have somebody else do it because you didn't have time to deal with it at that moment. And you don't always know what you're getting. You know, I don't mean to throw shade on, there's good ones, but there's also bad ones. And there's, you go talk to anybody.
And not everybody treats their meat the same.
No,
obviously.
You go talk to any hunter. You're going to have people that have had good experiences and bad experiences with processors. They, you know, I've done it. I've had to bring a deer to a processor, you know, where I know I made a great shot. There was no taint. That meat was not tainted. It was pristine when I brought it there, and I get it back and it's kind of funky. And that's enough to make me really upset.
Well, yeah, you put so much time and effort into it. One other thing that I didn't really consider is, like you're talking about, you know, it adds up. You got to do it all right now. But if you hang it up for a couple of days, you know, Saturday after your hunt, you didn't kill one. You got a little time to kill. Go carve off the hams, you know, go carve off the front shoulders, and then deal with the rest of it the next night whenever you're not as busy. Yeah, yep. That was cool, man. I enjoyed that one.
Good stuff. Definitely something to consider for your camp this year. Folks, that's going to wrap it up this week. We want to make it easy for you to listen as soon as a new show is ready, so here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 779-345-2918. Again, the word hunting to 779-345-2918 to join our email list. And as always, we appreciate and need your support. So please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Hope you guys stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next episode.